Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to the program that helped you learn and improve your American English. We come to you 7 days a week with interesting stories from around the world, presented in a way that is easy to understand if English is not your first language. Today we have something special for you. You may remember that the Rana Plaza building in Bangladesh collapsed, killing 1,100 garment workers in April 2013. More than 2,500 other people were injured. Recently, the Victims' Compensation Fund finally reached its $30 million target. The needed amount came from a donor who asked to remain unidentified. All payments from the Rana Plaza Trust can now be made. As we hear from Katie Weaver, many victims desperately need the money as they continue to recover.
Rahana Akhtir is one such victim. She was working on the 7th floor of the Rana Plaza when she felt a strange sensation, like being in an elevator, she said. Then the 24-year-old woman heard a roaring sound. The room went dark. People started to run and scream. Ms. Akhtir fell, her leg twisted beneath a heavy column. She was rescued from the ruins almost 12 hours later. Ms. Akhtir's leg was crushed. 6 days later, doctors removed the leg from above the knee. The collapse of the 8-story Rana Plaza was the world's worst clothing factory disaster. The voluntary Rana Plaza Trust Fund includes donations from international clothing companies, the Bangladeshi government, and others. The International Labor Organization, or ILO, established the fund last year to compensate survivors and families of those who died. The Compensation Committee gave an update in April on the 2nd anniversary of the collapse. At that point, more than $27 million had been raised. About 70% of the compensation had been paid to about 2,800 people. The payments range in size from about $625 and 9 months of salary for those without injuries to thousands of dollars for other victims. The top official of the Rana Plaza Claims Administration says some people received more than $31,000. The advocacy group Clean Clothes Campaign said only half of the clothing companies connected to Rana Plaza gave to the fund. Those donors include Mango, Primark, Walmart, C&A, and Inditex, owner of Zara. In April, the clothing business Benetton announced a contribution of $1.1 million to the fund. Clean Clothes Campaign had urged Benetton for months to contribute at least $5 million. Clean Clothes Campaign said last week, "This is a huge victory, but it's been too long in the making." The group said the companies involved make a total profit of more than $20 billion each year. Yet, it said, it took 2 years and intense public pressure to get them to provide $30 million. Clean Clothes Campaign said the lack of speedy action shows that voluntary social responsibility is not dependable. More than 2 years later, many survivors are still struggling. Money alone is often not enough. For example, some female garment workers say their husbands took their compensation payments and left the marriage. Others still experience mental problems or physical pain that makes it difficult to work. Rahana Akhtir received treatment from the Center for the Rehabilitation of the Paralyzed, a hospital in Dhaka near Rana Plaza. Last year, she began walking with a prosthetic leg made at the center. The group also gave her a cow and training as a way to make money. The prosthesis causes pain to her leg, and she uses a stick to help her walk. She has trouble pumping water and carrying things. She says she has a lot of difficulties, but still has to try to do something. This is life, she says. You have to move forward. Some of the neediest survivors received additional help from organizations including the International Labor Organization and local and international nonprofit groups. They supply training for new jobs or provide money to start small businesses. 35-year-old Litan Mia was a supervisor on the fourth floor of the Rana Plaza. He was trapped under the ruins for 14 hours. A university student rescued him. Mr. Mia's leg was fractured, and he could not work for 7 months. He says he was under serious stress about how to support his family. Mr. Mia received about $1,200 in compensation and attended a skills training workshop funded by the German aid agency GIZ. He says he used to remember the traumatic memory of the collapse, but after being involved in this business, he is always busy and does not have time to think about what happened. On a quiet street a few miles from Rana Plaza, Shahjahan Salim works in his small shop. The 37-year-old cannot use his hand very well, so sometimes customers get their own change from a plastic box on the counter. Mr. Salim was a supervisor on the fifth floor of the Rana Plaza. He was uninjured in the collapse, but he went back into the wreckage when he heard calls for help. Over 4 days, Mr. Salim rescued 37 people and recovered 28 bodies. On the fourth day, he freed a man by using a saw to cut off an arm trapped under heavy wreckage. Mr. Salim then slipped and fell 4 floors, more than 12 meters. He seriously injured his back. He was hospitalized and then treated at the Center for the Rehabilitation of the Paralyzed for almost a year. Today, it is very difficult for Mr. Salim to walk. With training and money from ActionAid and the ILO, Mr. Salim opened the shop where he works 7 days a week. As many as 200 customers come each day. The store helped him to go ahead, he says. Shahjahan Salim says he does not regret going back into the wreckage of Rana Plaza, although it left him permanently disabled. But, he says, the disaster should never have happened. Government should not permit this type of building, he says. We lost many lives. I want to see a garment industry where workers are safe. Widespread safety efforts are going on now in Bangladesh. At the same time, survivors of Rana Plaza struggle and carry on with their lives. I'm Katie Weaver.
You are listening to The Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. We Americans have an expression, if you give a person a fish, they will eat for a day. If you teach a person to fish, they can eat for a lifetime. One way to explain this is that helping people grow their own food is a better way to fight hunger. That is the purpose of an agricultural research organization called Harvest Plus. Harvest Plus is teaching people around the world how to grow what it calls smart crops. Its project in Mozambique is having surprising effects. In 2006, Harvest Plus workers provided orange sweet potato plants to people in 24 Mozambique villages. The workers taught these people how to grow the vegetables. They also explained the importance of vitamin A to staying healthy. Farmers in Mozambique had been planting white and yellow sweet potatoes, not the orange-colored ones. The white and yellow potatoes have very little vitamin A. However, one small orange sweet potato has a full day's supply of vitamin A. A lack of vitamin A is dangerous. Without enough vitamin A, you face an increased risk of getting a serious disease or dying from infections. Around the world, 190 million young children are not getting enough of this important vitamin in the foods they eat. That number comes from the World Health Organization. Economist Alan Dubois is with the International Food Policy Research Institute. He talks about the Harvest Plus project in Mozambique. He says about 70% of children there were vitamin A deficient. They were not getting enough vitamin A.
About 70% of kids under 5 were vitamin A deficient. So you have this huge need for new solutions. If you can do something through agriculture to increase the amount of vitamin A in the diet, you're in much better shape because that's much more sustainable.
Mr. Dubrow says the potatoes had a surprising effect on the health of children. At the end of the 3-year study, the researchers compared the health of children in villages growing orange sweet potatoes with those not growing them. Children living in the sweet potato villages had 40% fewer cases of diarrhea than other boys and girls. Among children under the age of 3, the difference was 50%. According to Mr. Dubrow, showing the impact of a food-growing project on health is very important. Nutrition experts say vitamin supplements, that is, fluids or pills you take in addition to normal meals, can only do so much. Experts are suggesting that linking agriculture and health issues is a natural and effective partnership. They say teaching farmers how to grow healthier food is among the best ways to improve health. Harvest Plus is now helping farmers in other countries. In India, the group is helping farmers grow iron-rich millet, and in Bangladesh, it is helping farmers grow high zinc rice. I'm Anna Mateo.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we look at the presidential campaign of 1980 and the election of Ronald Reagan. The months before Election Day in November of 1980 were difficult for President Jimmy Carter. Many Americans blamed the Democrat for the nation's economic problems, including high inflation and high unemployment. Many also blamed him for not gaining the release of 52 American hostages in Iran. About a year earlier, Muslim extremists had seized the United States Embassy in Tehran and taken the Americans as prisoners. President Carter urged all Americans to support his administration during the crisis. As the months went by, however, he made no progress in bringing the hostages home. The Iranians rejected negotiations for their release, and an attempt to rescue them failed. The president appeared powerless. Carter's political weakness led another Democrat, Ted Kennedy, to compete against him for the party's nomination. The Republican Party, however, was united behind a strong candidate, Ronald Reagan, a former actor and former governor of California. Reagan's running mate for vice president was George H.W. Bush. Bush had served in Congress and as head of the Central Intelligence Agency. He had also represented the United States as ambassador to China and to the United Nations. The inability of the Carter administration to solve the hostage crisis and other problems made many Americans feel that their country was weak. Reagan promised to give them confidence once more in the nation's strength. Carter and Reagan debated each other several weeks before the election. To some people, Carter seemed angry and defensive, while Reagan seemed calm and thoughtful.
Next Tuesday is Election Day. Next Tuesday, all of you will go to the polls and make a decision. I think when you make that decision, it might be well if you would ask yourself, are you better off than you were 4 years ago? Is it easier for you to go and buy things in the stores than it was 4 years ago? Is there more or less unemployment in the country than there was 4 years ago? Is America as respected throughout the world as it was? And if you answer all of those questions yes, why then I think your choice is very obvious as to who you will vote for. If you don't agree, if you don't think that this course that we've been on for the last 4 years is what you would like to see us follow for the next four, then I could suggest another choice that you have.
On Election Day, voters gave Reagan a huge victory. It became known as the Reagan Revolution. Inauguration Day was January 20th, 1981. Ronald Reagan became the nation's 40th president and, at 69, the oldest ever elected. In his inaugural speech, the new president talked about the goals of his administration. A major goal was to reduce the size of the federal government. Reagan and other conservatives believed that the nation's economy was suffering because of high taxes and unnecessary laws. Government, he said, was not the solution to the problem. Government was the problem. He urged Americans to join him in what he called a new beginning.
The economic ills we suffer have come upon us over several decades. They will not go away in days, weeks, or months, but they will go away. They will go away because we, as Americans, have the capacity now, as we've had in the past, to do whatever needs to be done to preserve this last and greatest bastion of freedom.
Ronald Reagan was born in 1911 in the small community of Tampico, Illinois. He was a good student and a good athlete. While in college, he became interested in acting. But he did not have enough money to go to New York or Hollywood to study to become an actor. Instead, he tried out for a job as a sports announcer on radio. A radio station in Davenport, Iowa, liked his creativity and gave him the job. Later, Dutch Reagan, as he was called, worked at a radio station in Des Moines, Iowa, and then he moved to the big city, Chicago, where he worked as an announcer for the Chicago Cubs baseball team. In March of 1937, the Cubs were in California for spring training. Reagan went along, and while he was there, he took a screen test with Warner Brothers. The movie studio liked the friendly, handsome young man and offered him a job. Before long, Ronald Reagan was a Hollywood star. In the 1940 film Canute Rockne, All-American, Reagan played Notre Dame University college football player George Gipp. His deathbed speech contained a line that would often be associated with the Reagan presidency.
Ask them to go in there with all they've got. Win just one for the Kipper. I don't know where I'll be then, but I'll know about it. I'll be happy.
In King's Row, Reagan played a double amputee who had lost both legs.
Randy! Randy! Where's the rest of me?
Drake.
Randy!
Yes, Drake?
It was that accident.
Yes, dear. But don't talk about it.
He remembered King's Row as the film that made him a star. During World War II, Reagan joined what was then the Army Air Corps and made training films. Reagan became deeply interested in politics during his years in Hollywood. He started out a liberal, but his political views became increasingly conservative. He served six times as president of the Screen Actors Guild, a union of movie actors. After the war, Reagan guided the Screen Actors Guild through a frightening time for actors and others in the entertainment industry. It was the time of the powerful House Un-American Activities Committee. Its hearings resulted in the feared blacklist. The blacklist was responsible for hurting, even ending, the careers of many in the film and television industries if they were thought to be communists or to have communist sympathies. It was through the blacklist scare that Reagan met his second wife, Nancy Davis. Her name had mistakenly been confused with that of another actress, causing it to appear on a blacklist, and she sought Reagan's help in correcting the mistake. They fell in love and would marry in 1952.
Must be a big push this time, Ace.
The Admiral told me not to tell.
Reagan and Nancy Davis appeared together in the World War II drama Hellcats of the Navy, in which he played a naval officer and she a Navy nurse who loved him.
The Admiral should have told me not to worry.
I thought we settled all that about you and me.
It won't stay settled, Case. Not until you tell me you stopped caring.
By the early 1950s, Reagan stopped appearing in movies and turned instead to a new medium, television.
And every Sunday night, General Electric brings you the finest motion picture stars on TV.
For many years, Ronald Reagan was the commercial spokesman for General Electric and host of a series of dramatic shows. For much of his life, Ronald Reagan was a Democrat. But by 1960, he was making speeches for conservative Republican candidates. In 1966, he became a candidate himself. He ran as a Republican for governor of California. Democrats did not take him seriously. They made fun of some of his movie roles, as in Bedtime for Bonzo, a comedy where his co-star was a chimp. But Reagan had the last laugh. He won the election by almost a million votes. As governor, Reagan was praised for reducing the state's debt, but criticized for raising taxes. Some people also thought he reacted too strongly against student unrest on college campuses. But he won re-election in 1970. In 1976, Reagan ran for the Republican presidential nomination. He came close to winning that nomination away from President Gerald Ford. After accepting the nomination, Ford asked Reagan to share the stage with him. The strong welcome that Reagan received was a clear sign of his future in the party. That future would come just 4 years later when Reagan won the presidency. On Reagan's inauguration day, Iran finally released the hostages it had been holding for 444 days. Walter Cronkite paused in his CBS television coverage of the inauguration for this breaking news report from Dan Rather.
Walter, according to our CBS News sources at Tehran Airport, one of the two Algerian jetliners is taxiing, or was just a few moments ago. Now, as best we can make it out, here is where the situation with the American hostages stands at this moment. They remain in Tehran, or at least they were up until just a few moments ago, at the airport, apparently moments away from their flight to freedom, a few moments after spending 444 days in captivity. And can you imagine what it must have been like inside that airliner for the hostages this morning?
As president, Ronald Reagan quickly began work to get Congress to reduce taxes. He also began a weekly series of radio broadcasts. Each Saturday, he would comment on developments in American life and politics. Reagan's ability to relate to people earned him the nickname the Great Communicator. 2 months after he took office, Ronald Reagan was shot while leaving an event at a hotel in Washington. In the first moments, no one realized that he had been hit, but there was a bullet in his left lung, close to his heart. At the hospital, Reagan jokingly told the doctors, "I hope you're all Republicans." They were able to remove the bullet, and he made a full recovery. The gunman, 25-year-old John Hinckley Jr., was sent to a mental hospital. His explanation for the attack was that he was trying to impress the actress Jodie Foster. We'll continue the story of the Reagan presidency next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.